Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
A former President Clinton administration official and World Health Organization advisor, Jamie Metzl, said Monday the United States should be aggressively investigating whether the COVID-19 virus originated from a virology lab in Wuhan, China. Metzl was canceled at the onset of the pandemic for pushing the fringe theory that the virus leaked from a Wuhan lab before claiming 3 million lives across the planet. Media outlets and leading political figures are starting to treat this as a serious possibility. A Florida sanitation worker was recently recognized and awarded in Hillsborough County for saving a young boy's life. In early February, Elias Cazada, a 7-year-old, was playing hide-and-seek in a garbage container. When the truck arrived, the garbage can was mechanically hoisted up and its contents dumped into the back of a truck. The driver noticed the boy through the surveillance camera and activated the emergency stop button. Waldo Fiddley, a garbage truck driver working for Waste Connections, is the hero. USA Radio News.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
Actor and sex offender Bill Cosby was denied parole by the parole board in Pennsylvania. The board said a lot of factors went into its decision to rule against the comedian. They say he did not participate in a treatment program for sex offenders, and he failed to develop a parole release plan. Strike three was the fact that he got a negative recommendation from the Department of Corrections. In September 2018, Cosby was sentenced 3 to 10 years in prison. Now that the pandemic is winding down in America and over half of American adults are vaccinated, what's the status of Airbnbs? Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau reports.
Airbnb is extending its global ban on parties on rental properties through the end of the summer. The company saying the policy has proven to be popular with their host community. Airbnb saying they will not tolerate behavior that disrupts neighbors or violates the trust of their host community. The company saying it will provide another update on the future of the policy at the end of the summer.
Thanks for listening. We are USA Radio News.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
This day in history, Flash, 1961. The British newspaper, the London Observer, publishes British lawyer Peter Benson's article, The Forgotten Prisoners, on its front page, launching an appeal for amnesty in 1961. The movement later became Amnesty International. Flash, 1964. The Palestinian Liberation Organization was founded. In February 1969, Yasser Arafat was elected its leader. Flash, 1957.
But even with this going on, it was unthinkable that it would ever happen. We heard it, but it couldn't happen. It just could not happen.
When the 57 season came about, and again, they were playing games in Jersey City, and the solution of a new ballpark hadn't materialized yet, then it became a little more evident that, hey, this could possibly happen.
What do you think of the idea of the Dodgers moving to Los Angeles?
I don't like the idea.
How about the Dodgers moving to Queens?
I don't like that idea either.
Well, where would you rather see them if you had to choose between the two?
I'd rather see them right here in Brooklyn.
By the time the Dodgers played their last game at Ebbets Field in late September, callous indifference had set in. A 67-year run was ending. and only 6,200 people showed up to see the final act.
Baseball League owners voted unanimously to allow the New York Giants and Brooklyn Dodgers to move to San Francisco and Los Angeles, respectively. I'm Lance Pry, and this is USA Radio News.
Attention timeshare owners. This is an urgent consumer alert from the Timeshare Exit Hotline, a national company specializing in helping consumers legally get out of their expensive timeshare contracts. We're offering you a way to legally get rid of your timeshare. So if you're fed up with the maintenance fees that keep on coming and want to learn if you can terminate your timeshare legally and permanently, call today. Even if you've tried before and were unsuccessful in getting rid of your timeshare, call today and see if we can help. We offer a complete 100% unconditional client satisfaction guarantee. Make this completely free call and learn how we can help you legally put an end to your timeshare nightmare once and for all. You have nothing to lose, so call right now to qualify and receive a free consultation. 800-897-1434. 800-897-1434. That's 800-897-1434. Paid for by Airtime Media.
Live.
Hey, welcome back. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. You know, the Bible often tells us that we should remember. And the reason is because we're humanoids and we forget. And here we are on this holiday weekend. And when we say holiday, it really is a holy day when you think about it, this Memorial Day weekend and all that it represents. I want to bring on the president and founder of American Faith and senior pastor at Influence Church in Anaheim Hills, California, Phil Hodson-Piller. Hey, Phil, how are we doing?
Good, Bill. Good morning. And it is indeed a significant weekend that most people reduce down to time to go to the lake, to the mountains, to the beach or whatever, and do not pause long enough to think about, why do I have this? Why is this a holiday? And to your point, called a holy day, it is one of those days where you kind of reflect on God and the sacrifice of man and the ultimate sacrifice, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And the thing is, it's always been a challenge. You and I have talked about this before. I think you've given me therapy on this topic, because I said I'm really challenged that often, you know, in a general context, Americans, you know, everything's happy holiday. Everything's happy this, happy that. And happy Memorial Day just doesn't go. It just grates my spirit when I hear happy Memorial Day, because, there is a cost that goes in to this hallowed day that represents, hundreds of thousands of Americans who have gone for us for the sake of freedom and have fought all over the world to preserve our freedoms and the freedoms of other nations. And I think that's really a time. And sometimes what happens with Memorial Day, it gets confused because people think, oh, it's the military. So, you know, every veteran, you know, and all this kind of, and I kind of resent it a little bit. And I'm a former Marine. I mean, we have our Veterans Day and I appreciate how sensitive people are these days. People who know that I've served in the military, they're very kind, Bill. And, you know, thank you for your service and for them, I just want to say in part, gosh, I wish you were part of it too, because it was so meaningful in my life. I think that, you know, today we have less than 1% of our citizens serving in the military. And I think that's a lost opportunity, because I believe, like, you know, what Israel has found is that everybody serves at least 2 years in the service of their government in the military, in the IDF. And I think that's something that we should learn and take note of. And, because it's, you know, in a sense, we have skin in the game and we have a little bit more understanding of what our Constitution is all about, and certainly what liberty is all about, and why some of us get so irritated when people disrespect the flag.
Uh-huh. You know, it was funny. I had this thought right before you called today, and that was that one of the things that's reducing, I believe, patriotism in America, is there also the reduction in the number of people serving in the military?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're serving in the military, I mean, it's hard to find somebody who's not patriotic who's serving.
Yes.
And you think about how the buildup of whether it was, you know, World War One, World War Two, there was something that said, I have to, nationalism is important. My country is important. And the patriotic songs we sang, they remind us of that. Mm-hmm. And on this weekend, it's a reminder that not everybody came home.
Yes.
And some paid the ultimate price, and they spilled their blood on a foreign land for our freedom. And the protesting that we've seen over the last year reflects nothing of the sacrifices that have gone before so that people can stand up and have free speech, and which is now endangered, obviously. But it is a somber day. And yeah. For me, it was easy to remember because my birthday is on the 30th. And so, you know, it all kind of my birthday fell right around that time. And mm-hmm. My dad was, you know, serving in the military as a colonel in the Army. And so it was an easy instruction point for me as a child mm-hmm. growing up to say, what is this all about?
Right. Exactly. And it translated for you. And, you know, you mentioned the people who spilled blood overseas for the sake of freedom that we enjoy today. And to me, I will extend that to the family members. You know, the letters, the knocks on the door that they received when officials from the government and the military had to come in and tell them that they've lost a loved one. You know, it's really heartbreaking. But again, you know, we remember this. We should, for the right reasons. And I think it's interesting right now is we have Memorial Day, and in contrast to that, we have this higher and increasing interest in socialism, which is absolutely antithetical to everything that Memorial Day represents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. But a lot of it goes back to, you know, we can blame, let's just pick on a group right now. We can blame millennials for something, okay? But ultimately, it's not 100% their fault. Remember, yeah. It was the parents of millennials
right.
who failed to instill something in the life of that child that was important for the republic, for democracy, for freedom, for God, and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you bring up an excellent point, because you and I talked about this last week in regard to the report from George Barna and talking about the condition of millennials and how they're moving away from these institutions, including the church. Because in their assessment, these institutions have failed them. And I think that, you know, that's valid in as much as that we should listen and say, okay, what happened here? And we relegated the education of our children to that cell phone that they keep in their hands. And God forbid, I mean, if you want to make a teenager angry, threaten to take away their cell phone. My goodness, I mean, you think you were going to put a pillow over their head or something. You know?
Yeah, and think about, you know, a lot of people say, well, Memorial Day, so we know what we do if we've now got that pay. How did this thing get started?
Yes.
It actually started with Southern women gathering flowers on the graves for both North and Southern soldiers who died in the Civil War. So the origin goes back to 1868 on May 30th. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of look back and go, wow, that's pretty significant where it was Southern women
mm-hmm.
who gathered flowers for both North and South, you know, and then it would take it a few years to evolve a little bit further, you know, until it was finally in 68, it was moved to last Monday in May. And so that's why we have it now, not on the 30th, but, you know, to kind of make the calendar simple, I suppose,
yes.
and make it fall on a holiday so you get a long weekend. Again, mm-hmm. go back to let's make this convenient. That happened in 1968.
But, you know, Phil, I want to pause for just a moment and meditate on that. You know, you got Southern women, because we know the Civil War, what was going on, us against them. I mean, you talk about, you know, the revolution, you know, the Civil War that took place. But, you see, this is the Spirit of God that acted on these women that, you know, that extended their hearts in such a way to honor the dead, regardless of what side they fought on, but that they were American citizens above all, right?
Right, right, exactly. And I think it was a reflection on, well, everybody lost.
Yes.
Nobody won on this Civil War. We both lost sons, and we both lost fathers. We both lost even the women who suffered and died through this thing. So it was a painful experience. You know, Douglas MacArthur, the great general, told his West Point cadets in 1962, he said, "The soldier above all other men is required to practice the greatest act of religious training, sacrifice. And that is, in the battle and in the face of danger and death, he discloses those divine attributes which his maker gave him when he created him in his own image."
Going to break. More from Phil after this.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and pains never seem to end. That's why you need to click sunny-bay.com for the best sleep you can get. Sunny Bay's legendary products can help, like our lavender stress-reducing products, locally sourced and handmade in the USA. Or try Sunny Bay's award-winning pillows for traveling or extra neck support while sleeping. No need for pills or expensive chiropractic visits. Our neck support pillows are that good. Sunny Bay is a homegrown small business, but our products are designed and rigorously tested based on your demand and feedback. And they make great gifts for mom, dad, or anyone. Find Sunny Bay products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, or at sunny-bay.com. And right now, get free heat patches and a belt with any purchase. So remember, Sunny Bay heating pads, neck pillows, and stress-relieving hot or cold wraps. As restrictions come to an end and you get back to work, do it the healthy way with Sunny Bay.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Why have thousands of aspiring authors teamed up with Christian Faith Publishing to publish their book? Because Christian Faith Publishing is an author-friendly publisher who understands that your labor is more than just a book. We provide authors freedom and flexibility throughout the publishing process, professional book editing, award-winning design, and some of the highest royalty structures in the publishing industry. And as always, you will retain 100% of the rights to your book.
I was looking to find a company that I could trust, one that assisted in the editing process completely.
The most important qualities that I was looking for was a publisher who was honest and upfront. No hidden costs or fees, and owning the rights to my own work.
Christian Faith Publishing will publish, market, and sell your books in all major bookstores, online booksellers, as well as specialty Christian bookstores. Call for your free author submission kit.
800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. That's 800-978-4811.
Do you need to sell your home? If you've sold a home before, you remember how stressful and expensive it was. Sold.com is here to help you sell your home for the most money and with the least amount of stress. There are new ways to sell your home that you've never heard of before. Did you know there are companies who'll offer you cash for your home? Did you know you could trade in your home for a new one? Did you know there are realtors who'll sell your home for a flat fee instead of an expensive commission? It's true. Sold.com services are free. So if you're looking to sell, make this free phone call right now and learn how your next home sale can be faster and easier than you ever thought possible. Pick up your cell phone and call right now. 800-399-3706. 800-399-3706. 800-399-3706. Again, that's 800-399-3706.
We are Monday through Friday, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific, as we celebrate and honor. And I say celebrate, it's more of a commemoration
than a celebration, you know, in a sense. I guess I'm conflicted in the terms, Phil. Phil Hotzenpiller continues with us, the founder and president of American Faith, still conflicted with how to respond. I mean, some of these words naturally come out, but it's more of a holy day, this, you know, which isn't to say that we shouldn't have time, you know, to enjoy with our family and have our barbecues, but I kind of liked what the late Charles Krautheimer would do. And this is something that I've been practicing before whenever I could do this, is that when you're with a group of people, whether it's Memorial Day, Veterans Day, 4th of July, is that you'd read the Constitution. And this is what he would do. He would have people in his backyard barbecue, and they would go around and read, you know, they would take turns reading, you know, passages of the Constitution until they were, you know, they read it in its totality. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. But after reading the Constitution, it really helps to center us on what America is all about, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah, and I think it's just a great reminder to go back to roots of, you know, what made us great and what can we learn, and quite honestly, what should we not practice again? Because it doesn't mean, as a people, we have failures. We fall short of things. But that doesn't mean that we didn't do a lot of things right. And I think that's a significant thing.
Well, what other country do you know has this idea of striving for a more perfect union? I don't know of another country that even espouses that, but that's part of our DNA, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, and if you're honest about yourself, I mean, you got to look in the mirror. You got to look at that guy in the mirror and say, you know, you can do better.
Yes.
There's some improvement you need to do as a human being. You know, when all the statues were being pulled down, you know, I had to take a moment, reflect, and I think, okay, is there anything that if I were in somebody else's shoes, would I in any way see it that way? And I had to take, if you don't take the moment to at least get out of yourself and your own thinking and reflect on somebody else, I don't think you're really growing as a human being.
Right.
You know, and was the answer to tear them down? No. Was the answer to abolish history? Absolutely not. But I think if you don't take the time to go, let me think about it, let me meditate on it, then I think you at least have gone through a process. And in some cases, you might say, you know what? That guy probably does need to go. He doesn't need to be glaring in the face of somebody, you know, the entire time. They're going to live out their life and walk by it every day of their life. So
right.
I like the idea of reflection and growth as a nation, and the same thing true, you know, as an individual. Let me tell you something really interesting that happened on Memorial Day. In 1865, former slaves organized a parade and led by 2,800 singing black children, and they reburied the soldiers with honor as an act of reparation and gratitude for their ultimate sacrifice that the Union soldiers gave to bring freedom to the slaves. Now think about what a unifying mark that was.
And why don't we hear about that, Phil?
Exactly.
It doesn't fit the current narrative, but certainly go ahead.
Well, I think one of the problems is that you've got our universities that are filled with liberals and socialists. You know, I've said today, if I had a kid in high school, you know, we'd find there would be his choice to have about four schools he could go to, because it's just their indoctrination centers right now. So history has been changed, it's been questioned, and you pour that into the life of a 18 to 22 year old, he's going to come out questioning everything that he was taught, because now he's in that formative year of becoming an adult, where he gets to think for himself. Little does he know he's not. He's thinking what the professor thinks. And so we're cranking out, you know, these Marxist left-wing socialists, and at the tune of, you know, $100,000 a year sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, and then, of course, and they're being encouraged because Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are saying, free tuition. So that 100... $100,000 of tuition debt's going to go away. So it's like, well, the socialism thing seems to be adding up okay. But, you know, like anything, there's a price to be paid. And as you said, the kids have been indoctrinated based on what we were talking about again with, and the George Barna study. And these kids think these institutions have failed them, you know, from marriage, their church, the whole deal, because this is the narrative that's been put out there. Is everything bad about marriage? And certainly there's some tough things out there, and the statistics are brutal, you know, to the point where, you know, more people are getting divorced, it seems, than are getting married these days. And it is a mess, and these kids have been subjected to that. But we need to be able to celebrate and commemorate, you know, those institutions that have served people well, not all across the board, and some that are not, then, you know, just like you said, just like that man in the mirror that has to look at it and say, as much as it would count on me, what is my contribution? Am I building up or tearing down here?
Yeah, and I think the little things that we can, you know, so what do I do? I mean, if I'm listening to this, I say, okay, so what do I do? How do I frame the narrative? What, you know, and I do think we need to remember this weekend. Every Memorial Day, even though my dad did not die in the war, mm-hmm. he served in, you know, World War II in Korea. I'll post a picture and I'll just say, hey, I remember my dad, the sacrifice he made. But then I'll further say, but the ultimate sacrifice was made by those of my that served with my dad who did not
exactly.
come home.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a practical thing I can do, because I don't have a loved one who died in a battle, mm-hmm. but I have a long history of a military family who served in battle after battle after battle and war after war. And so I think you have to do something, you know, mm-hmm. and make it practical. Put out the flag. When people say, why is the flag out? I want to remember those who gave their life for my country. And do, you know, I think sometimes we forget the little things mm-hmm. and how important they can be in us, in our family, and in our neighborhood.
Right.
And, you know, and these, so make it practical. Get yeah. strategic a little bit.
And these things are unapologetic, right? I mean, you don't need to apologize for this. You know, look, if people are offended, you know, God bless them. But as much as it would count on you and your household, I mean, you're going to honor the dead, those that have sacrificed. You're going to honor our country because the era, as you said, in terms of civility and honor, the idea of honor, what has happened to the idea and the concept of honor in our country right now, Phil?
Well, it's a forgotten word. It's almost like a four-letter word, even though it's five letters. I just want everybody to know. I know it's got more than that. You know, I can still can't.
Oh, people are getting ready to tweet you big time, buddy. Let me tell you.
You bet. Yeah, that's not a four-letter word. But it is. It's become a word like duty, honor, respect. They fall into a collective group of disenfranchised words that are seldom used except on the lips of those who somehow are far beyond me in age. Mm-hmm. And I think that's unfortunate. Can I say this? This is good news. I just sent you this.
Yes, I did.
Patricia Cullors, the Black Lives Matter founder, is stepping mm-hmm. down amid her controversy of buying multimillion-dollar houses in white neighborhoods. And I have to laugh. I just love these kind of articles because mm-hmm. Remember, the Bible says what you sow, you're going to reap, and there's a reaping that comes in every person's life, and the destruction that this woman brought, coupled with other leaders within that BLM movement, unbelievable. And this woman is not just, in my opinion, a bad, duplicitous woman who brought much harm on it. She's also an instigator of religious practice that finds its roots in Satan. And so this is not I just clapped my hands when I saw her buying that, you know, first the house in Inglewood and then in Los Angeles and then in Georgia. I thought she's in trouble because this ain't going to last long.
No, without a doubt. Well, you know, sometimes, as the book of Ecclesiastes says, because sin doesn't demand payment immediately, in other words, you pay for it later, and when it does, it gets much more complicated, doesn't it? And much more severe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, with, well, and without a doubt, the damage that it did to, and that it's doing to, you know, the whole movement, which, you know, eventually this is the thing about the truth. It does have a way of finding its way out. Phil Hotzenpiller, where can they go for more information? We got 5 seconds.
AmericanFaith.com.
Attention timeshare owners. This is an urgent consumer alert from the Timeshare Exit Hotline, a national company specializing in helping consumers legally get out of their expensive timeshare contracts. We're offering you a way to legally get rid of your timeshare. So if you're fed up with the maintenance fees that keep on coming and want to learn if you can terminate your timeshare legally and permanently, call today. Even if you've tried before and were unsuccessful in getting rid of your timeshare, call today and see if we can help. We offer a complete 100% unconditional client satisfaction guarantee. Make this completely free call and learn how we can help you legally put an end to your timeshare nightmare once and for all. You have nothing to lose, so call right now to qualify and receive a free consultation. 800-897-1434. 800-897-1434. That's 800-897-1434. Paid for by Airtime Media.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
A former President Clinton administration official and World Health Organization advisor, Jamie Metzl, said Monday the United States should be aggressively investigating whether the COVID-19 virus originated from a virology lab in Wuhan, China. Metzl was canceled at the onset of the pandemic for pushing the fringe theory that the virus leaked from a Wuhan lab before claiming 3 million lives across the planet. Media outlets and leading political figures are starting to treat this as a serious possibility. A Florida sanitation worker was recently recognized and awarded in Hillsborough County for saving a young boy's life. In early February, Elias Cazada, a 7-year-old, was playing hide-and-seek in a garbage container. When the truck arrived, the garbage can was mechanically hoisted up and its contents dumped into the back of a truck. The driver noticed the boy through the surveillance camera and activated the emergency stop button. Waldo Fiddley, a garbage truck driver working for Waste Connections, is the hero. USA Radio News.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and 3 beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my 5th concussion. Did you know that over 1 million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type, and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
Welcome back. 28 minutes before the top of the hour, we're going to be visiting with Nathan Gorenstein. His new book, The Guns of John Moses Browning, basically the first major biography of the Thomas Edison of guns. Browning was a visionary inventor who designed the modern handgun and whose awe-inspiring array of firearms helped ensure victory in numerous American wars and found an important place in American culture. Nathan, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, this is the second book, right, that you have you've published?
It is, right. Number
you've written?
First one,
yes.
Was about, first one was about an incident in Boston, a crime gang in the Boston of the 1930s that included two of my distant relatives. It's a good story, actually.
Yeah, a little family story, something that, you know, that you shared in traditional story form, you know, every Christmas and Thanksgiving, and now it's in the book form, so you can tell everybody full details are there now, right?
It was a big family secret. I didn't know about the details till I was in my 40s. So,
it was a family secret, huh? That's great.
Oh, yeah. No one talked about it. And then it was fascinating to find out this huge event happened involving some first cousins twice removed.
Right.
It was involving MIT IT grad and a minister's daughter and my two cousins, and it was quite the deal at the time. It was
almost sounds like the opening of a barroom joke, right? I'm just saying, I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, there's a punchline there somewhere. But so the family is welcoming you back to the fold. You can still come back to enjoy Thanksgiving holidays with them and everything, right?
People were okay with it, actually. Mm. And I, some people, actually, in one branch of the family, it really was an eye-opener for them because they didn't know why certain things in their family were never taught. And the book explained their mother's psychological history, and it was really quite a revelation to some family members because it answered questions about how families functioned. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have this sort of, I mean, three of the guys were executed, and that's very traumatic. It was very traumatic for all the families in Boston at that time. And so that leaves long scars.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. Well, and the road to healing is transparency. Hopefully, you know, for the family, they've been healed through this process, although you had to be quite conflicted as you got into the story and, starting to pull back the veil on all these things. The fact of the matter is that all our families got stuff. We don't know, and there's secrets that people would rather not tell. And, I was watching here recently documentary on Aretha Franklin and, the things that were hidden. We just do. I mean, it's kind of a natural course thing, especially during the time when you and I were growing up. I mean, you were a kid, you didn't say anything. Stuff happened. You kind of heard whispers in the background, but whatever. So, the name of the book was Tommy Gunn Winter. And it's the story of this Boston gang from the 30s that Nathan had written about earlier. So that's what we're referring to. But now we're talking about the guns of John Moses Browning. How did this come about that grabbed your interest? You said, hey, look, I've got to write a book here.
Well, I was researching another book that involved firearms peripherally. And, I went down an internet rabbit hole. And I sort of vaguely knew about Browning, the Browning automatic rifle, the 1911. But as I did more research, I decided this guy had invented it, had a huge impact on modern firearms, and I went looking for a book about him. Not about his guns, there's lots of books about his guns, but a book about him. I was interested in how did one guy invent all these different mechanisms, because that's what a gun is. It's a machine, essentially, be it a single shot or a machine gun. And I realized it wasn't a book. There was one which was helpful to me in doing my book. It was a written in the 50s and published in the 60s, partly abridged by one of Browning's children. And it was useful. It's the only history we have of his early life, but it's very limited in both some of the things are inaccurate, and it cuts off early in his life. Mm-hmm. So I started doing research, and I was very fortunate the Browning family in Ogden allowed me to have access to 40 boxes of records that had been sitting in one of the family members' basements for years. And I went to Belgium, FN, which was crucial to Browning's and firearm history. And they went through their files, those which hadn't been destroyed in World War I and World War II, and came up with some really useful memos where they talked about Browning. And then I found some. Well, useful being a reporter because you know how to look for things.
Exactly. I mean, this is your background. You were an investigative reporter in that. And of course, not to mention the fact that you're a competitive pistol shooter, too. So this seemingly is all coming together. This is all in your wheelhouse here, right?
So I found it was the most useful thing in terms of how Browning invented all the things he invented came from a patent lawsuit brought against him by George Luger, the guy that invented the Luger pistol.
Yes.
And who knew? This was virtually unknown, but there were two lengthy depositions in 1901 and 1907 in which Browning and his two brothers, Matt and Ed, who were very important to his creations, talked under oath, transcripts, 100 pages long each document, talked about how they worked. How did they invent a gun? Who did what? And there's a lot of other material in there, too. But, this was the only time anyone has heard Browning's voice that we know to be Browning's voice. He never gave newspaper interviews. He'd chat newspaper reporters up privately, but he wouldn't talk about his guns publicly. He didn't leave any papers behind because he didn't use papers. You know, the thing that I found most amazing about Browning is that he could invent things ranging from single-shot rifles to the 50-caliber machine gun still used today by American troops overseas. And he did it without blueprints, without working drawings, without change memos. He did it in his head. And it's
unbelievable.
Brother.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's they research it now. It's called spatial thinking, and they have some other words for it. And it's something science realized existed around the 1920s, 1930s. But he could do that, and there's a remarkable there's a quote in the book from a Colt executive, because all the Colt pistols, of course, were designed by Browning. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how, you know, Browning said other inventors, you know, they invent a part, then they invent the next part and the next part, but Browning would come with a whole mechanism in his head. And he said, you know, he'd never seen anything like it. And so it was remarkable that he had that skill. And you know, other folks who talked about it, the guy who invented the steam engine, Albert Einstein, you know, there are other, Tesla, the electrical guy, mm-hmm. there are other people who talk about how they see these things in their head in a way that yes. I certainly don't, and most people don't.
Right, exactly. No, very unique and amazing that, in this era of these inventors like this, as you mentioned, Edison or Tesla, you know, and you've got, you know, John Moses Browning in his discipline, you know, and you wonder, you go, wow, this is all, you know, this is all coming together in the West for a, you know, I think for a design purpose, you know, that John Moses Browning was right where he needed to be and to have the, go ahead.
This himself in a number of ways. You know, he was born in 1855 in Ogden, Utah, and his father was a pretty good gunsmith himself and a blacksmith, and so from like age five, Browning was working in the shop, and he had amounted to an engineering degree education,
right.
Fixing all sorts of firearms that would cross the desk across the workbench in Ogden, Utah, because it was a main path for people going west, so folks would show up with a broken rifle, broken shotgun, pistols, all sorts of things. So he you know, like any other sport, if you learn a sport at a really early age, you're going to be better than other people down the road, I think. And he learned how to fix guns. He dealt with the mechanisms of guns and the physics of guns early on, and that was one great advantage he had.
I'll tell you what, Nathan. Let's pick it up because we got to go to break in about 5 seconds here. More from Nathan Gorenstein.
Why have thousands of aspiring authors teamed up with Christian Faith Publishing to publish their book? Because Christian Faith Publishing is an author-friendly publisher who understands that your labor is more than just a book. We provide authors freedom and flexibility throughout the publishing process, professional book editing, award-winning design, and some of the highest royalty structures in the publishing industry. And as always, you will retain 100% of the rights to your book.
I was looking to find a company that I could trust, one that assisted in the editing process completely.
The most important qualities that I was looking for was a publisher who was honest and upfront. No hidden costs or fees, and owning the rights to my own work.
Christian Faith Publishing will publish, market, and sell your books in all major bookstores, online booksellers, as well as specialty Christian bookstores. Call for your free author submission kit.
800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. That's 800-978-4811.
How would you like to improve your hearing by 100% for around $100 a month? Are the joys of life worth $100 a month to you? Of course they are. All Hear produces state-of-the-art hearing systems that are guaranteed to improve your hearing or your money back. These are quality devices, not some cheap imitation. That's why we guarantee your hearing will be improved. We'll even give everyone that calls right now a free 30-day home trial. Use your hearing device for 30 days. If you're not 100% happy, send them back. And we offer easy financing plans for about $100 a month with virtually 100% approval. If you're ready to get your hearing back the way it was when you were younger, call right now for your risk-free 30-day trial.
800-765-2964. 800-765-2964. 800-765-2964. That's 800-765-2964.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Hey, we're back with you. 14 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. And we're talking with Nathan Gorenstein, himself an investigative reporter and newsman. And he's written, this is his second book, The Guns of John Moses Browning, the remarkable story of the inventor whose firearms changed the world. I mean, think about this, okay? This is the first major biography of the Thomas Edison of guns. John Moses Browning brings to life a visionary inventor whose astonishing array of firearms has shaped American culture and armed the world's militaries for more than a century. Think about that, okay? Few people are aware that Browning, a tall, modest, cerebral man born in 1855, raised as a Mormon, invented the modern pistol along with hunting rifles and shotguns still sold today. He designed machine guns for World War I that proved decisive in World War II, played a major role in winning the Battle of Britain. Incredibly, his weapons are still relied on by the American troops in the 21st century. What an incredible legacy, Nathan, huh?
Yeah, it makes him an historic figure. No matter what folks think about firearms, are for good or ill, or an integral part of the modern world. You know, they can be used for good, they can be used for bad. And much of modern firearm technology can be traced back to this one man. You know, in World War II, every American airplane, fighter and bomber, B-17s, B-24s, B-51s, all used Browning's 50 caliber machine gun. And everyone, I mean, there wasn't an air battle fought that wasn't fought with his machine guns. The Brits, in the Battle of Britain, used his 30 caliber machine gun, and you know, as a British arms guy, arms officer wrote, you know, without the machine guns, it's the Spitfire and the Hurricanes were flying hood ornaments. Mm-hmm. And the British chose Browning over the domestic Vickers because the Browning guns were more reliable. And then in ground combat in World War II, you know, there was the Garand rifle, which was crucial, but there was the 1911 pistol, the Browning automatic rifle, the 30 caliber machine gun, the 50 caliber machine gun, and all of a sudden you see that the guy who armed America's army in World War II was this guy who was already dead for 15 or 20 years, but his inventions, you know, had survived the test of time. He got the name of Thomas Edison of guns, and around late 1917, early 1918, when he first really reached public recognition. Until then, all the guns sold in America that were designed by him didn't carry his name. These were the guns manufactured by Colt, Winchester, Remington, Savage, and they were produced under the company's names in America, different in Europe, but we're talking about the States here. And all of a sudden, the Army, which is gearing up to enter World War One, announces, well, we're going to arm our troops, which are the sons and daughters of sons in those days and sisters and brothers, whatever, of American families with guns made by a guy you never heard of, that you've never even seen these firearms before. And so all of a sudden, Browning was discovered by mainstream America and became the subject of all sorts of glowing front-page articles and magazines and newspapers, mostly managed by his brother, Matt. Matt was the businessman in the family, and he was integral to invest in Browning's finances, and along with another brother, Ed, who actually did most of the machining in Browning's career. Browning thought, came up with the ideas, and they would make these, his brother Ed would make, with Browning's help, they would make a finished firearm. So when they, when Winchester, they made the 1886 rifle or the 1897 shotgun, they didn't get blueprints from Browning. They got a finished working gun, and then they reverse engineer that.
Right, exactly. Wow, that's incredible.
That's not how it works now.
No.
So that's where the time is. So the newspapers and the magazine writers, one guy called him that, and like, these things happen, everyone else picks it up. And at that era, that became his nickname. In the same way that Thomas says Edison had invented everything electric, Browning had invented, seemingly and pretty accurately, everything about guns, shotguns, rifles, pistols, machine guns. You know, the technology survived after him. You know, he had 128 patents, and only, I think, it's 30 of them were ever, if even that many, were ever produced. But there were all these other gun designs out there, and people would, manufacturers over the years would go pick pieces out and add them to their firearms. You know, the Kalashnikov, or AK-47, the safety on that is exactly the same in appearance and function as the safety Browning used in the early 1900s on his first semi-automatic hunting rifle. And then the Ithaca 37 shotgun, I think that's the number, still made today, millions made. It uses an expired patent from Browning. After the original Browning patent expired, the Ithaca company picked it up, and it's a successful shotgun because it loads and ejects both out the bottom, so you can be a left hander or a right hander, and it doesn't matter. So it's become a very popular firearm for law enforcement and other agencies because of that. So his inventions have lived long after him, and most. You know, the slide-action pistol, you know, where the slide goes back and forth, you know, the guy clicking in the movies, that's the dominant firearm in the world today, handgun in the world today, and it was invented by Browning in around 1896.
Was this the 1911 design?
Yeah, the 1911. Mm-hmm. So that design, which wasn't his first one, his first slide pistol was made by Eppen in Belgium in 1899-1900, and it became a huge success between that date and the beginning of World War One. FN sold about 1.25 million Browning pistols in Europe, which works out to about 1 per 300 Europeans at the time. It was very, very popular. It was, no one had ever seen anything like it. You know, we take these things for granted now, but back then, It's a nicely designed, beautifully made little machine in your hand. You pull the slide back, you pull the trigger, there's a pop, a loud pop, the grass comes out, the bullet comes out, the smoke, and it became popular as an example of modern technology, and people bought them just because they were so amazing little machines. It became a problem all glommed onto his gun, and there's a great piece in the London Times, I think it is, from 1907, 1911, it's in the book, where they say, well, there's a conspiracy here. All these anarchists are using the same gun. That's proof that there's a massive international conspiracy.
Right.
And all it was they were using, they got the best gun.
They got the best, exactly.
Yeah, and they, yeah. You know, and in Germany at the time, there was an interesting government study that got worried because they said the country was changing from the culture of the knife to the culture of the gun. They said before 1900 or so, you'd become an apprentice, you'd get your first job, you'd go out and you'd buy a really good knife. Mm-hmm. They said now the government, well, the people going out and buying guns because mm-hmm. manufacturing had made them inexpensive, and the gun of choice was one of Browning's pistols. Mm-hmm. And the problem was, you know, people were too casual with them. They didn't, you know, it was new. Who knew?
Yes.
Like the first time you saw an iPhone, what do you do yeah. with that?
And, exactly.
And some mm-hmm. people were careless with them.
Mm-hmm. What was the cost of a gun at that point in time? When you say it became more affordable?
Well, his first rifles in America sold for about $25 a piece. And in France, now my brain is blanking on me, one of the problems I had was changing French and Belgian and German values back then to American. But in America, you could buy one of his pistols for $15 or $20. These were the mm-hmm. same guns that were made, different variations, but made by Colt that were also designed by Browning.
Mm-hmm.
And went for about that much. But, you know, in modern, I have to use my inflation calculator. I should do that. Figure out what that is in modern dollars. But they were more expensive than revolvers. And America mm-hmm. actually didn't adopt semi-automatic pistols as quickly as the Europeans did. For many, many years, revolvers were made more important. And while Browning sold a lot of his pistols in America, or Colt did, I should say, the handguns favorite was still just revolvers, I'm sorry, until mm-hmm. really the 1980s, 1990s when that changed.
Wow. You know, it's interesting, Nathan, to read that, you know, with his background, being a Mormon, and we know how Mormons feel about, you know, guns. I mean, they won't invest in guns and anything of a military bent or anything like that. But here he is, a Mormon, and here he's the one that brings guns to the world and has been the backbone of our military with his designs. Were you able to pick up any regrets or anything like that, or he just understood the nature of man, that they were, you know, that men were going to, you had evil that resided, and you needed to have protection?
Well, it was partially what you just said. He started off inventing hunting rifles and hunting shotguns and trap shooting and sport firearms. And he got intrigued by what he could do with all these new technologies coming up. Mm-hmm. He was inventing this stuff at a time when modern, the Second Industrial Revolution was occurring. But what we know, and we can't say this definitively because he didn't talk to folks about this.
Mm-hmm. We've got about 30 seconds left, so go ahead. All right,
okay,
go ahead.
Sure. That's it. Ronnie didn't like war, but he invented guns because as long as people were going to be violent, he wanted American troops to have the best guns. That's it, in a nutshell, what we mm-hmm. think we can say.
Exactly. Well, Nathan Gorenstein, who grew up in Medford, Mass., graduated from Medford High and UMass and Amherst, and after working at the newspaper in nearby Northampton, he left for Delaware, where he worked for a local news journal, and later Philadelphia, where he was a reporter and editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer. And he is the author of The Guns of John
Moses
Browning.
We know the global elites, the 1%, have hijacked and subverted the U.S. culture, economy, and government. The battle to take back America begins with the Rise USA, the Resurrection Tour. Thousands of patriots are on the march to Little Rock, Shreveport, and three stops in Texas, plus many other stops on the Arise USA Tour. 50 states, 84 stops, 111 days. The Arise USA Tour will unite the 99% of we the people that stand against the 1% globalist elites and their tyranny. The tour is free with hundreds of speakers and freedom fighters, including former CIA spy Robert David Steele, urban
Global Health Alliance, Kevin Jenkins, sixth-generation farmer Trent Luce, human rights advocate Sasha Stone, and many more. For tour info and a list of speakers, go to AriseUSA.com. Join the thousands that have donated over $1 million to Arise USA Tour. To donate or for the tour stop nearest you, go to AriseUSA.com. That's AriseUSA.com.
The final phase of...